Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to the Chase Thomas podcast, where I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I'm joined by fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Good evening, sir. It is a nice Sunday to be back talking ball, man.
Not for me. The Falcons had one of the worst opening games in a long time.
I feel for people who are big time college fans that are also Falcons fans. Mm-hmm. It's like, I feel like it's so much of my timeline, you know, being a Georgia fan. It's like you see a lot of Georgia stuff on Saturday, and then it's like just Falcons misery on Sunday. It's like, I feel for them because it's like nothing can ruin my weekend after like a good win on Saturday. And then it's the Falcons just fan base is just so depressing to be a part of. And I just like, can't relate. Whatever the Falcons are doing, like I'm entertained by my red zone viewing on Sunday. Like Falcons, they can't shake my mood for a second.
I had to go immediately do my run and exercise, so I feel better now. If we had done the pod not too long after the Falcons drubbing at the hands of Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith and that vicious front seven and just the unbelievably bad offensive line for the Falcons and just how bad Matt Ryan was and how bad it was just everything that could have been a disaster was a disaster in this game, Matt. But that is for tomorrow's pod. That's the NFL pod. And this is a college football podcast that we're doing on this very Sunday.
Matt Green. Real football. College football.
Oh, yeah. Real fun stuff.
It seems to be like a low-key rivalry with like people who prefer NFL versus people who prefer college. Mm-hmm. Like, I saw stuff on Twitter just like on Thursday, like, oh, imagine thinking college football is better than this.
And then people like, do that on Saturday. They're like, imagine.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's just your preference, man. Like,
why do people get so worked up about that? Why do people still police what other people enjoy?
Like,
why
are we? Your preference is wrong. My preference is better.
I hate it so much. Like, it drives me nuts. Even within family and friends, people, I'm like, why do you care? Why? What? Like, just like what you like and don't like what you don't like. And also, everything doesn't have to be rated. Like, I don't have to compare the NFL to the college game. I don't care. Like, I like them. I don't have to compare high school to that. It's all very different. I like them for very different reasons, too. And I don't know. I don't have to explain myself as to why I prefer. But I do think it's very... It's a bad look to publicly just be like, how could you not like my thing as much as me? Like, that is a weird... immature, silly perspective to put out into the atmosphere. And people do that every day on twitter.com. It's very, very stupid. So I would encourage you, if you're one of those folks who pick up your cell phone and you're like, look at this awesome ending to Jacksonville State, Florida State. Couldn't imagine loving the NFL more than this college game. Put the phone down. Who cares? Like, just enjoy the moment and, you know, move on.
Yeah,
move on with your day.
It is that specific example, I feel like, is one of those things that I think makes college football great. I feel like just those crazy endings. Like, I see them occasionally, like that Dolphins-Patriots, like, lateral play a few years ago. But it doesn't seem like we get, like, those crazy endings in the NFL like we do in college. But, like,
I got to see a kick six in real time yesterday. I never thought I would get to see a kick six in my life. And it was overturned because, we'll get into this, but the officiating in Pitt, Tennessee was an objective failure across all counts. Like, it was an objective failure. Like, there was no block in the back on that return. It was ridiculous. But the crowd, when he makes his move back across the field, and you, like, it's not Auburn, Alabama, obviously, but, like, it was exhilarating.
It was your Auburn, Alabama.
Huh?
It was your Auburn.
It was my Auburn, Alabama. The Johnny Majors Classic. People are starting to wonder, is this the new Iron Bowl? And, you know, people are talking. And It's a possibility.
Let's make an every year thing.
I hope so. I don't know if they've planned on that yet, but like, I would love to have Virginia Tech and Pitt be an every year thing. Why not?
Virginia Tech, I'm all on board for that. Like, once I learned how close Virginia Tech and Tennessee are, like that, like Georgia Clemson, how like that's trying to bring that back. Like, they need to play like a couple times, you know, every few years. Like, I was like, maybe not do it in a NASCAR stadium every time.
Well, do that like every 5 years or something. Put it in Bristol every five or something like that to make it special every now and then.
But I feel like just seeing like the view from the crowd, like obviously I wasn't there, but seeing like the view from the crowd, it looked like the field is just so far away.
Oh yeah, no, they couldn't see anything. My uncle was there. They couldn't see a thing. Yeah.
I saw a stat recently. I don't know if you're a big NASCAR guy. I don't know if stat is the right way to put it.
Big Chase Elliott guy over here.
It showed Talladega can fit all 14 SEC stadiums inside the infield. Is that accurate? I saw like a map of it. Like, is that place really that huge?
I mean, if the maps don't lie, right?
I saw a graphic on Twitter. It has to be true.
That's true. Graphics on Twitter are rarely inaccurate.
There you go. Everything on the internet is accurate. So.
Well, especially Twitter.com. Most things are accurate on Twitter.com.
Twitter.com is real life. I think I've heard people say that.
Well, Matt, don't forget, folks, that we can follow Matt on Matt_W_Green on Twitter.com. Go check him out there. Follow myself at Chase_Thomas. Go check out ChaseThomasPodcast.com to get access to all my previous episodes of this very podcast. Subscribe to the newsletter. It's sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Support us on Patreon today by going to patreon.com/ChaseThomasWriter. And if you like listening to Matt and myself, definitely leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts if you're an Apple Podcast listener. But we have some games to get through, Matt Green. And I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, didn't play back the episode from earlier this week to remember how I did on picks. But I know I beat you this week. My gut instinct is that I rebounded without looking.
Is that what your gut instinct tells you?
I think I did, right?
You'd be incorrect.
Would I be incorrect?
Yeah, you did better against the spread, but I beat you against the spread.
Wait, calm down. Hold on. Just off the top of my head, I know I missed Iowa State. I called ECU. Like, that game ending the way it did. Saw that coming a mile away. I went through that telerespond.
No, you were wrong on that one.
Well, I mean, they were in the game. It was classic. Irrelevant. Pitt, Tennessee, fandom blinds us all. App State called App State.
You were on point, too, because you picked Miami to get the win, but App State...
To cover.
So that was one of your good picks.
Your nonsense with Zeus screwed my home dog of the week. So NC State, like Zeus, what
told
he,
you, man, take it to the bank. Zeus is home dog of the week.
He put a hex on Devin Leary and the NC State Wolfpack. Dave Doran could not recover from the Zeus magic that he
the Zeus magic
that he constructed, or what is the word when you, the hocus pocus is right around the corner. We're in spooky season. Now with fall coming in, but what is it when you're it's not, it starts with a C, when you're putting a bunch of
conjured
that is the word, yes, conjured. He conjured up some devil magic and placed it against the Wolfpack.
You don't put that devil magic on Zeus, all right? Zeus would never.
But yeah, and then San Diego State, I feel like I nailed that one too, and BYU.
Yeah,
and BYU.
You did, yeah. You got all your wins.
It's just the spread.
You missed some, though. Yeah, you missed some. We can get into.
Well, let's run through it. How do we do this weekend, Matt Green?
So overall, you were 5-6 overall, and you were 5-6 against the spread. I was 8-3 overall, and 7-4 against the spread. Mm. So, we both missed Ohio State. We both missed Texas. We both got Michigan. We both got Kentucky, but it was a good week. You had Iowa State. I had Iowa. I took Pitt. You took the hometown Vols. So it was just take my picks to the bank with you. You know, it's what you got to do.
So where are we at to the season to this point? What is our current record?
So right now, overall, I am 16-7 on the season, but against the spread, I'm 11-11-1.
Mm.
Overall, you are 10-13,
oof,
and against the spread, you're 9-13-1.
Oh man,
so, still a lot of time left.
Below the Mendoza line. I don't like that through 2 weeks.
Yeah, got to get back above 500.
Mm. Well, let's get into the games from this weekend. Let's start with the game of the week: Iowa State, where Brock Purdy, I think he just threw another interception as we were recording. I knew immediately, too. This is one of those games I was watching it with my uncle, one of my buddies here in Knoxville, and it was just like, oh, this is over. Like, Iowa has a way of, like, clinching a win when it's, like, 20-10, and you're like, oh, they've played Iowa football to a T, and you're not getting out of their grasp. Like, they're just slowly clinching you into submission, and that is what happened to this Iowa State group, and Matt Campbell's faces were not the best, and Breece Hall, bad fumbles, and this was like everything that could have gone wrong in this game went wrong. But Matt, I feel like you smile a little bit because Iowa State not only goes down and you picked Iowa, but they go down in those black uniforms that you hate.
Yes. Yes, man. Like I told my brother, like I texted him that morning because I saw you could see the helmet on game day.
Mm.
Oh, side note.
Mm.
Ashton Kutcher was great on College Game Day. I don't know if you watched it.
I did not.
The week before, did you watch it the week before with that country guy, Kane Brown, on there? Dude looked either like stoned or drunk and like didn't know anything about college football. Like he said multiple times, like, oh, I should have done more research. Like Ashton Kutcher was like someone who was, I guess, at least used to being on TV and like clearly was a college football fan. Like just gave like some actual like, you know, low-key analysis, like, oh, they did this last week, so I'm picking them, you know? And it was just so much better. I hope Game Day learned something from, like, Ashton Kutcher being on there. Like, someone who's just, like, I don't know, just, it was just a much better product this week.
Did he drop a, damn, Jackie, I can't control the weather?
that's a classic lie. But him and Corso are going back and forth, like, it was good stuff. But yeah, I texted my brother that morning because I'm just like, what are the odds that Iowa State is going to come out rocking black and white uniforms? That, you know, like every big game they wear black and white. Like this school is burgundy and gold. Like, why even have school colors if every big game you're just going to wear the black and white? Like it's so dumb to me. But yeah, Iowa. I was just so impressed with Iowa. Like you said, this is just Iowa football. Like mm-hmm. they just won in essentially a blowout. Like Iowa State made it, you know, 27-17 by the end, but Iowa was so in control this game with 173 yards of offense. Like did almost nothing offensively, but you know, through 2 weeks, like this defense has forced 7 turnovers, scored 3 touchdowns. Like I was really impressed with the AP poll that came out today. Like I feel like it seems like we're getting more and more into like not projecting necessarily, but like ranking the teams based on what they've accomplished. And I liked seeing, you know, Oregon jump up to number 4, Iowa jump into number 5. Like Iowa resume wise, like they've been one of the most impressive teams so far. Like Indiana, we still don't know exactly how good Indiana is, but that was just a dominant win. And then Iowa State, a road win over a top 10 team and like a big rivalry atmosphere like that. Like I like seeing Iowa jump into the top 5. I think they're definitely deserving.
Mm. Absolutely. I mean, Iowa is like, are we preparing ourselves for Iowa Big Ten champs?
Hey, I mean, with how they've played defense and run the ball, like, I mean, if a team is going to beat Ohio State, like you've seen, like, you're going to mm-hmm. have to do it with offense, like we saw yesterday.
But, I mean, Oregon just did it without a quarterback. That's the thing is, like, if you're worried about Spencer Petras, it's like, well, I mean, Anthony Brown was a nothing burger yesterday, and it was all C.J. Verdell and everything else, but it wasn't the quarterback play that got Oregon that victory over
Ohio State. Well, it
wasn't
the passing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
he did play. You know, he makes plays with his legs, and
right.
And you know, in the college game, you don't necessarily have to just have a guy that's just sit back there and pick the defense apart. Like he definitely played a great game, but
as a Georgia fan, you would know all about that.
I feel like Ohio State. Like I'm really concerned about their defense. Like through 2 games now, that they're giving up like 35 points a game. Like. What is it, like 235 rushing yards per game they're allowing? And granted, those could be the 2 best rushing teams on their entire schedule in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Well, Minnesota when they had a healthy Mo Ibrahim and than Oregon's rushing attack. Just like they were just unable to stop them, really. Like, we know about Ohio State's defense, but or about their offense, but their defense needs to see a lot of improvement.
Absolutely. Next up, Oregon 35. We mentioned this a little bit. Ohio State 28. Your immediate reaction, Matt Green?
Yeah, like I said, it's the defense. Like, you know, there's not going to be any teams on Ohio State's schedule that are going to prevent them from scoring points. But I don't think any of us saw Oregon coming into the horseshoe and getting a win. So I gotta give my hats off to Oregon, because I think when we went through this game, you were just like, can I just go ahead and take Ohio State in the points? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even close. And like, it was just from the jump, like, they just looked like the better team the entire game. Like, I didn't think there was anything fluky about it.
Well, we should make note, their best player didn't even play. Like, Kayvon Thibodeau didn't even play in this game.
Yeah, and Justin Flo, the big-time linebacker as well. Like, those two of the best defensive players on the team. And, yeah, Thibodeau's a superstar. And so for them to win on the road, like, it was a big-time statement win for Oregon.
How many yards do you guess the Buckeyes had in this game?
Oh, I mean, I think both teams had just over 500 yards.
Yeah. Ducks logged 505, the Buckeyes 612. How many times do you lose a football game when you register 612 yards?
Yeah, that's true. The only time you're going to do it is if you go ahead and give up 500 yourself.
I mean, this is also interesting. Like, it's so early in the season, but like, it's already a tale of two seasons for the Ducks. Like, we were so unimpressed by them escaping Fresno State a week ago, and we're like, oh yeah, they're in trouble, blah blah blah. And then the Pac-12 is just like, oh, now Oregon's a top five team. The Pac-12 has not had a team in the playoffs since Washington did it in 2016. And now we're like, oh, they just got through their biggest test, and the Pac-12 looks super crappy. USC goes down. Washington is an absolute mess. Like, oh, suddenly the path is very clear and very easy for the Ducks to make it into the playoff and break that streak. Like, they went from like, I don't like this crystal ball situation here, and I don't like this quarterback situation. I don't trust this. Thibodeau's gone. I'm a little nervous about where they're going.
You know, I was like as big of a doubter of crystal ball as there is. Like, you know, people constantly trying to tell me that Oregon's a playoff contender every year, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. And you know, you might be seeing it. And it's funny too, because there's a Clemson fan in my group thread of friends, and like, I know he was rooting so hard against Ohio State, because you know, that kind of, we kind of all expect chalk at this point, you know, just from what we've seen in college football in recent years. And with Georgia and Alabama kind of at the top, and then, you know, probably Oklahoma and Ohio State. So Ohio State losing really opens the door for Clemson to be able to get back in there. But now it's like, well, maybe Oregon just replaced them. Maybe they're now the Pac-12 representative that could get into the playoffs. So I'm really excited. I feel like it was a great Saturday, just for like, you know, just the unpredictability of college football seems to be back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Next up, Matt Green, we got South Carolina 20, East Carolina. East, a lot of people mess up and call them Eastern Carolina. It's not Eastern Carolina. No, it's East Carolina. They go down by 3. The Gamecocks survive. The Gamecocks are 2-0. Two things can be true here. The Gamecocks are 2-0, and the Gamecocks are the second worst team in the SEC. Is that fair?
I would think so. Just, I haven't necessarily made power rankings myself, but off the top of my head, I would think Vanderbilt and South Carolina, they look like the two worst teams in the SEC.
Yes.
But yeah, like, I mean, going on the road at East Carolina, don't Dowdy Field or something like that. I don't know what it's called, but, that atmosphere was rocking. And, I'm sure Shane Beamer's just glad to get out of there with a win.
I mean, I'm sure, but man, it's bad. Like, that's just, it's amazing how quickly this just fell apart. And like, this is a team that people thought like could win 9 games in a normal season in 2020, right? Like, there was a lot of optimism about where this program was not too long ago, because they were like, oh, Muschamp's recruiting his tail off.
We had some angry, some angry fans last offseason. We're like, 3 games? The season went in 3 games? You guys are out of your mind.
And now we are looking.
It wasn't even that many.
Now three is still just like, okay, maybe. Let's just see. We get a time for the Gamecocks. But, you know, they escape.
They had 106 yards rushing on 39 carries. Like, if you can't even push East Carolina off the line of scrimmage, like, oh, man, it's going to be a long SEC season for you.
Pittsburgh, 41. Tennessee, 30. Four. I was in attendance for this game, as I am every home game, but I have so many thoughts. My grandfather was texting me throughout. He's a former football official and was just like, this is the worst career I've ever seen. And he doesn't have a hat in the race. He's a Tech guy and was watching them, and we'll get to Georgia Tech in a little bit, but it was bonkers, the amount of flags that were thrown in this game. This game lasted like 4.5 hours. Like, it never ended. It went on forever. Pitt was falling over to get breaks. So there was a couple of defenders who fell down intentionally. Remember the Auburn guys who used to do this to get a break? I forgot who it was who did this all the time. But Auburn, I feel like, was noted for this in the SEC during the height of...
Notre Dame did it a few times.
Yes, Notre Dame did it, right.
Georgia...
Yeah, so they were doing that a lot in this game.
It looked like the defensive end for Tennessee was doing it early in the game, but then he never came back.
No, he was legitimately hurt.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was just, it looked kind of like he just sat down. But, but yeah, I just, we got
Milton goes down. So we should mention, Milton goes down, he gets hobbled, he takes a bad hit, and he leaves the game, and Hooker comes in. Milton, okay, so let me just, like, we know who Joe Milton is now. Like, the fact that I've seen enough at Michigan and enough of him here, he is the exact same quarterback he was at Michigan. There has been no quarterback growth from him. Like, he is not growing as a quarterback. He is not evolving. And I was listening on the local show, Sports Source, my go-to. I love Sports Source on Sunday mornings here in Knoxville on the local channel. Shout out to Sports Source. But they were talking about this, where it's like the playbook completely shifted with Hendon Hooker when he came in, where they were like, we're not taking any more downfield shots. And if the run's there, the QB draw's there, take it. And Hooker did that, and it got us back in the game. And we almost won that game because of that. Hooker was taking zero shots downfield. Zero.
Well, yeah, and Milton can move. Like, he's got that running ability.
He has terrible awareness, though. He has terrible pocket awareness.
He seems like a much more explosive runner. Like, he's actually going to make...
He had a huge run in this game, and that's why he is so frustrating. He had a huge run in this game, and it was gorgeous. But, like, it was not... He doesn't do it enough. Hooker is just so much more of a fluid, smart runner and reader of when the line's collapsing around him and things like that.
Yes. Milton has zero pocket awareness.
Right. And it's just so frustrating to watch in person. And the crowd is just losing it. The crowd cannot handle anymore Joe Milton. And also, he missed multiple open touchdowns in this game. He overthrows everything. Like, he overthrows everything. His deep ball is one of the strongest deep balls I've ever seen. Like, Sam Howell is right there. Like, Sam had a gorgeous, gorgeous bomb. Here's the difference between Sam Howell and Joe Milton, Matt. Sam Howell hits these. Sam Howell, when he unloads like this downfield, he hits his guy. Milton literally never hits anything deep. He just,
Milton,
it looks great.
He's in a throwing distance competition every time he just...
Right, and my broader point, the reason I bring that up is because Heupel doesn't challenge Hooker to do that. Like, if he just asked Milton to play like Hooker and just do the short stuff and run when he needs to, then I think Milton would have a better chance of success. But because they see his arm and they see the talent there, they're like, oh, he gives us a chance to go deep to Callaway or Jalen Hyatt or whoever, or Velus Jones, and then he never hits them. So we're wasting throw after throw because we're like, oh, maybe he'll hit it this time. Guess what? Spoilers. I'm going to do a spoiler alert here. He's not going to hit any of these. Stop it. He's not hitting any of these. It's like putting Stetson Bennett in a situation where you're like, hey, Stetson, I need you to go deep 5 times a game. And you're like, he's not hitting any of these. What are we doing? He's not hitting.
Hey, he was hitting him on Saturday, man.
Okay, that's enough. Anyway, the mailman, we'll get to that nonsense and the quarterback controversy that's brewing. It's not me, folks. It's not me that's talking, but a lot of people are saying that there is a QB controversy brewing. And would a Heisman quarterback lie on the broadcast? I don't think so. But anyway, Pitt, Kenny Pickett did all he needed to do. Pitt's offense has a much stronger identity and knows exactly who they are. Their defensive line was really good. All of Tennessee's running backs got knocked out, so Jabari Small left this game early, so they're down to their third string, Jalen Wright. There was no push. The offensive line was gassed. Tempo doesn't work. Defense was gassed. Theo Jackson's a star. That is all I've got. Oh, and the penalties are a joke. The penalties, we had like 13 penalties for like 150 yards. It was a monstrosity.
I think Pitt had like another 100 yards in penalties too, or 9 for 76. So mm-hmm. Yeah, there's just so many penalties in this game.
But yeah, so Pitt 41, Tennessee 34, and I don't know.
So in your opinion, Hooker should be the guy moving forward.
Yes. But I would also let Bailey get the second half against Tennessee Tech.
Okay.
I would give him a half. And just to see what you have there. I think at some point, because Bailey's going to transfer. I think we have to look at it now where you're like, you have to get these kids. Because like Beck should transfer today. I don't know why Carson Beck is still a Georgia Bulldog as of 7:35 on Sunday, September 12th. There's no reason now. Like he should pack his bags, leave. Like it's clearly not happening. This is a joke. I got first team reps all week. I got lied to. Out. But that's the kind of program that's going on in Athens. That's the kind of situation.
Are you going to dance around Georgia?
I'm going to keep dancing around. I'm teasing it because it's not even on our list. They're UAB one. Okay. So we'll get to them because there are some stuff there. Next up, App State 23, Miami 25. Miami, the highlight of this game is the cat that was saved. Did you see this?
Yes, that was awesome.
What happened there?
I want to know how did it get in the stadium, but how did it specifically get to where it was, like hanging underneath the second deck or whatever? Like, man, that was insane. Just hearing the crowd just hanging on every like movement from that cat. And then they eventually, I don't know if they caught it with the American flag, but
I think they did. Yes.
Broke its fall. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that was hilarious. Just hearing the crowd erupt and lift the cat up, have it Simba moment. It was good stuff.
Especially,
but yeah, I felt like people were overreacting to the week one just being annihilated by Alabama. But in the App State, this could be one of the top five group of five teams in the country, I think you could safely say. So it's not just a cupcake opponent. But, if this team is expecting to compete in the ACC, you want more than a last second win over App State. So maybe we should be a little more alarmed by Miami's lack of offense. Like Derek King, like he's solid for what he is. Like he's, a really athletic quarterback, but this guy, he's just so limited passing that Miami's not going to do any real damage, I don't think, in the ACC. I mean, for what we've seen in 2 weeks, it's just hard to know who's good in the ACC, but Miami just doesn't, they don't appear to be a legitimate contender in the ACC in my book.
Absolutely. Next up, man, the ACC is just a dumpster fire. An absolute dumpster fire. Clemson's not making the playoff. Like, I don't know how, with this ACC being this bad and that loss to Georgia, I don't know how they find their way in there. Texas.
I mean, if they run the table and they're a one-loss team, though, it's like...
Why? This conference is terrible. When are they going to... There's no statement win.
It's been terrible for a few years. Like, 2018, their schedule was super soft in 2018, but that doesn't mean they still can't be one of the best teams in the country. They came out and blasted Alabama in the national championship, so, like, based on what they did in the regular season, I don't think anyone would have predicted that. So, like, your schedule, it's important in terms of comparing the teams, but your schedule isn't necessarily who you are, So Clemson can still be one of the top four teams in the country, even if the rest of the ACC is just trash. I just think the problem is, if it's any kind of debate, they're – just the data points, the good wins just aren't going to be there, and that's where they're going to lose. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're worse than Oklahoma or they're worse than Ohio State or Oregon or something. Like, they could be better than all those teams.
For sure. Next up, we've got Texas in a stunner. Texas 21, Arkansas 40. This is the feel-good story of the weekend, right? Like, Sam Pittman after the game, leading the Woodpig Suey, and just... I was listening to, on my run today, Saturday Down South, Connor O'Gara, who's talking about Arkansas in this game, and I think he made a lot of good points, but like, this is something that we overlook, is just the culture. Like, you have to look at the culture fit first when hiring a coach to lead your program. And the culture fit for Pittman here, and how much he loves the Hogs, and how much those guys clearly love him, it's just, it's a huge win-win. And I think you see that on the field and what you saw on Saturday. They just believed, and they're not scared. And like the jokes about Texas, like, they're real though. Like, I don't, Oklahoma's not going to have a problem in the SEC. Oklahoma's going to drub a lot of these programs. Drub them. Like, drub Mizzou. They're going to drub Tennessee. They're going to drub Kentucky. Like, that's going to happen. But will they have some problems against Alabama and Georgia like everybody else does? Yes. Do I believe that they're going to fall down a peg? No. Texas? Are they 5-7 in the SEC schedule? Probably.
Yeah, that's it. Like, especially...
They're in for a rude awakening. I think that is not an overreaction based on this game and based on where they're at as a program. I don't think that's an overreaction.
I mean, especially with the Big 12 news of expansion, like the fact that they already have their teams. Like, I'd imagine this is probably going to, you know, go into place
expedite the timeline.
Year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Like, you know, if we're making the power rankings on in the SEC right now, like, where is Arkansas? Like, 9?
Yeah.
Maybe 8? And if you're getting blasted by Arkansas, like, you know, no shade at Arkansas. Like, I love what Sam Pittman's building here, but, like, they're nowhere close to the top of the SEC. So Texas mm-hmm. thinks they can just come in and flex their muscles. Like, they're – I can't imagine. I feel like that's what – like, just reading into every time they pan to the Texas fans in the crowd, it seemed like an existential crisis. Mm-hmm. Just like, are we sure we want to do this? Like, the big wigs at Texas, like, they're cool. They're going to be making some serious money once that SEC money starts coming in. But if you're trying to win some games in the SEC, like, I don't know what's a realistic expectation for them to be competing in the SEC. Like, if you're losing by 4 touchdowns to Arkansas or 3 touchdowns to Arkansas, like, and like you said, the culture, Sam Pittman, like, with Chad Morris, it just seemed like, you know, where do you go? Tulsa after he was at his first head coaching job, and then it's like Arkansas.
No, SMU.
Is SMU? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just kind of a step up from SMU, and then I'm sure if he got another gig, like, he'd take another step up from there. Like, Sam Pittman, this is his destination job.
Yeah.
Like, Arkansas is his dream job. And that's not the case with a lot of guys out there. So I think Sam Pittman is just the perfect fit. I was definitely on this podcast, you know, 3 or 4 days ago saying, you know, we all like Sam Pittman, but I think we need to kind of temper our expectations for what Arkansas really is. But, you know, this atmosphere was just great, and just to see Arkansas come out and beat a team like Texas like this was a huge win.
Absolutely. And then we should mention Hunter Card was pulled in this game. Casey Thompson got some reps, so we'll have to see who's under center for the Horns next week, but not a good look. Bijan Robinson stuffed by this Barry Odom defense. And Barry Odom
finished off some drives. This game could have gotten a lot uglier too. Like, they were settling for a lot of field goals, but like, they were clearly just, you know, just dominating the possession. They just kind of were moving the ball much more than Texas was, I don't even feel like the score line necessarily showed how much they were dominating this game through the first like 2 or 3 quarters.
NC State 10, Mississippi State 24. Those early FIPs, remember that? Remember when people were losing their minds about Mississippi State in those early projections on this Will Rogers, Mike Leach bunch, and the pirate ship is off to a 2-0 start. It looks like he's doing the Leach thing where he's just year one was figuring a lot of stuff out and they're just terrible. And then now they're just good. And their defense is legit. Like, this is the combination where like Zach Arnett, being able to retain him is huge. Cause that dude has coached up this defense. This Bulldog defense is legit. Devin Leary struggled mightily in this game, putting up 10 points. Get Mississippi State, just not going to get it done. This was a huge win for Mike Leach because I think people are going to overlook this game for him in this program. But like, NC State's good, and they just buried him.
Without a doubt, NC State, this is a quality win for sure. It's like, it's not like the cachet of a national brand or anything, but they came out and they were just superior all over the place. And you know, you win the turnover battle like this, and you know, that's what you're going to get, lopsided wins. And I don't know about you, like, this was one of those games I was circling. You know, we have, like, I think Missouri, Boston College, I think, is coming up. Like, there's a lot of these good, like, non-conference kind of, you know, your middle of the road, middle upper echelon versus our middle of the upper echelon. Like, there's a lot of good games like this within conferences. And I think, like, I don't want to overreact to just, you know, 2 weeks, but it feels like the SEC is more head and shoulders above the rest of the conferences than they've ever been. Like, with some of these results we saw, like, for Arkansas to do what they did against Texas and Mississippi State to do this, like, if Arkansas is the eighth or ninth best team, like, is Mississippi State the ninth or tenth best team in this conference? Like, in NC State, that's one of the top four or five teams in the ACC. So that's a huge win right there. And I don't know how much you watched of this game live. Like, I tried to, like, keep watching this game. It is – I can't imagine how it is to play in front of those cowbells. Like, it's hard to watch on TV just with how – just the noise, just the constant noise. It's like watching the World Cup when it was in South Africa with all the vuvuzelas. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just nonstop noise. It feels like you're in the biggest high school stadium you've ever seen. But yeah, you had to be impressed with Mike Leach. Like, he doesn't need to run the ball to be able to have success. I think they had about 15 yards rushing in this game, 15 carries for 22 yards. But yeah, Mississippi State, this was a big time win, and it is exactly what they needed after, you know, a lot of people questioning them over that last second win over Louisiana Tech last week.
Kentucky 35, Mizzou 28. This one hurt my soul to see what the numbers actually bear out, because I did not watch this game. Watching the highlights today and different drives and studying the drive charts and stuff like that. Kentucky ran the ball a bunch. The passing game was non-existent. And Liam Cohen can come in, but Mark Stoops, it's like the Kirby thing, where there's still only so much you can change. You can bring in a Monk, and you can bring in a Cohen, you can bring in a Drew Brady, but if the man in charge is not all the way in on evolving, Will Levis, sorry, buddy.
No, but see, I don't think that's what it is. I think it's, if you can run the ball, you always run the ball. Running the ball is difficult, and it's a safer play than passing. And if you can actually, you know, get 6.5-7 yards every single time you hand it off, why would you do anything different? Like, Chris Rodriguez was just running all over this team. Wandale Robinson had the huge run on that opening possession. Like, Kentucky still looks dynamic offensively, but I think when the run is working, you don't really need to pass. I don't think that means Kentucky can't pass. I think that option is still there. And Will Levis, like, I like his ability to make plays with his legs. Like, this game, I think, looked closer than it was. Like, it was a great game, but right before the half, just the 14-point swing of, I think it was Rodriguez, going into the end zone and fumbling, and then Missouri turning right back around and getting the touchdown before the half, like, turned a potentially 28-7 halftime lead into a 21-14 halftime lead, so... You know, credit to Missouri for staying in it. But I told you, this was going to be my low-key game of the night. And this one definitely delivered. Like, I was really
were enthralled by some Tiger Wildcat action on that.
Without
on Saturday
a doubt,
night. Yeah.
Man. I mean, I'm old school, man.
You really are.
340 yards on the ground. Like, Kentucky was pounding that thing. Like, people get confused. They think offense means passing. No, offense means... The offense is accumulating yards. If you're getting 340 yards, I don't care if it's in the air or on the ground. Like, that's domination. So they moved the ball at will. Had, you know, over 500 yards of offense. Like, I was very impressed with Kentucky's offense. Like, I would say I was one of the people out there, you know, before the season, you know, everyone saying, can Kentucky challenge Florida and be the second best team in the East? I'm over here like, okay, let's pump the brakes. Like, it's still Kentucky. After that performance against Missouri, I think Kentucky could be the second best team in the East. I've really been impressed with them through two games.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it just depends on what happened with Florida. I mean, Florida is just we'll get to them, an absolute wild card right now.
Yeah, for sure.
Washington 10. Speaking of not wild cards, Washington 10, Michigan 31. Michigan wins and covers here. Cade McNamara is super solid. The like what I'm watching with Michigan is like they have a really high floor and a low ceiling. Like this group, and Cade is not the kind of quarterback that's going to beat Iowa or Penn State or Ohio State, maybe not even Wisconsin. Like he's fine. Like he's fine for what he is. He's not going to cost Michigan any games, but the upside's not there. He's not a JJ McCarthy sitting behind him. So it's fine for right now. They're back. They really just needed a bridge guy to get that bad taste out of their mouths from last year, because Michigan's season last year was brutal, and we didn't know if Harbaugh and this staff was going to be back. But they take care of business here on primetime. Washington, the stats offensively are bonkers. John Donovan's the worst offensive coordinator of any Power 5 school.
This offense looked bad.
Like, this is Scott Loeffler on steroids type stuff. Do you remember the Loeffler offense with Auburn and Jeremiah Johnson that got Gene Chizik fired, basically? That is what he is doing. Like
Chizik got Gene Chizik fired.
Well, what? No,
Gene Chizik not having Cam Newton on his team got him fired.
I still maintain Chizik doesn't get fired if Malzahn never leaves. Like if Malzahn just stays, like he's probably fine.
That could be true, but that means Chizik was never that good to begin with.
I agree, 100%. Like we see that with a lot of coaches, though. Like a lot of coaches are only as good as their coordinators. Like Sam Pittman's not a good coach without Barry Odom. Like Barry Odom is keeping him and Kendall Briles are propping up everything. Like that. Those two coordinator hires are gigantic, gigantic. And then paying Barry Odom to keep him on staff this year was huge. Like they paid him a lot of money to stay on staff.
To say he's not a good coach, though. I mean, that is part of his.
Well, what I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. It's like good coaches, like Mack Brown does a great job as a CEO coach. Like there's a lot of coaches that need to be able to hire well and all that kind of stuff to outweigh what they bring to the table with X's and O's stuff. Like he's just not an X's and O's guy.
Mack Brown is the epitome of the CEO type thing, because I don't know, like I didn't watch, you know, I don't even know who they played yesterday, if I'm being honest.
Who, North Carolina?
I know they obviously lost to Virginia Tech in the opener, but like every time they pan to him, he's never talking to anybody. Like I don't know what Mack Brown does on the sideline. Like he's got the headset on. I guess he's just listening to what everyone else is talking about. But I don't ever see him talking to his players, talking on the headset. Like, it's just hilarious. Every time they show him, he's just kind of standing there. Like, yeah, you guys.
He's
the
CEO. Like, he's there to hype everybody up. He's not there to coach. Like, that's not his. I mean, I shouldn't say coach. He's not scheming up stuff. He's not getting in Phil's way on offense. He's not getting in the. I always forget the defensive coordinator's name in UNC because he came from Army. He's the Army guy. Whatever. He lets them do their own thing. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there.
They beat Georgia State, by the way, and beat them big.
No, I know they beat Georgia State because you know what happened in the beginning of that game?
What's that?
Did you see Sean Elliott, the Panthers head coach?
Oh, yeah, I did. Getting all mosh pit with his players.
Ripping one of their helmets off. I'm swinging. Like, I'm swinging.
That? Like, dude, relax.
It's ridiculous. You lost by like 48. And, you, like, what are you doing? Also, just coaches, stop doing this. Stop doing this. Stop smacking your players and ripping their helmet. Like, what are you doing? It's just weird. Weird behavior.
If he's not ready to play on the field, game countdown, like, you shoving him in the face and knocking his helmet off isn't going to get him more ready.
San Diego State 38, Arizona 14. Arizona, I think, is the worst team in the Pac-12 this year, and it's not particularly close. What about you, Matt?
Yeah, they're just bad. That's why, like, I didn't know much about Arizona or about San Diego State when making this pick, but I'm just like, they're a quality like Group of Five program. Arizona's just plain bad.
Yeah, there's just all this stuff with like Jed Fish. Oh, he's got the Patriots background, and Teddy Bruschi likes him, and then he made some good coordinators. You know who wouldn't be this bad? Bohannon at San Jose State, because he's actually been a head coach and he's done great at a program that was in the depths of hell, and it came down to a coach who may not recruit well or have the NFL ties that Fish has, but guess what? Bohannon wins games, and the end goal is to get Arizona back to respectability, because it's almost impossible to get Arizona to respectability because they're one of the worst college football Power 5 programs of all time. Like, it's hard as hell to win in Arizona. Jed Fish is not that guy. They're getting... it's not going to get any easier. They got... NAU at home, they should win that one. But look at after this, there's not another win on this schedule. I kid you not. They are going 1-11. You got at Oregon next, the week after that, UCLA, at Colorado, who almost beat A&M this weekend, Washington at home, even as bad as Washington is, they're not losing that game, at USC, Cal, Utah, at Pullman for the Cougs, and then at Arizona State to end. Like, they're winning one game. Like, this is atrocious. Yeah. Anyway, I just had to rant about that because I hate when programs do this and they hype it all up with all the backgrounds and the CEO style and the recruiting is going to be. And we're going to update this. We're going to update that.
Oh, it's from the Patriots. So is Tom Brady and Bill Belichick coming?
Yeah, like what? Like what? It's ridiculous. Last game before we do the rapid fire for the rest of the weekend. Utah 17, BYU 26. I'm telling you, that Big 12 announcement, they were ready to go to end that streak against Utah.
That would did it. Yeah, I was less than impressed with Charlie Brewer in this one.
I've heard this before.
Not feeling great, although with USC, I felt a little bit better about my Pac-12 South pick of Utah. But, you know, I guess this didn't count towards their Pac-12 record, so they still can win the Pac-12 South. But, yeah. After 9 straight wins, that streak had to come to an end at some point. So kudos to BYU for getting the win in the Holy War.
Jaren Hall's going to be a dude. Very different player than Zach Wilson, but he's going to be a dude. BYU's in for a good year. I don't think this bounce back season without Wilson's going to be as difficult as many may have expected.
Yeah, Wilson can make some plays with his legs, but Jaren Hall is a legit running threat.
We're going to pause real quick for a message from our sponsors, Matt Green, but we'll be right back. All right, we are back on the Chase Thomas Podcast, the Sunday night edition of the Chase Thomas Podcast, where we talk college football, recapping what happened on Saturday with my good friend and fellow University of North Georgia alumni, Matt Green. Go Nighthawks. Navy, rocking the Marine look on Saturday. Shout out to them. Dad, tired. Marine, coming from a Marine heavy family, Navy heavy family, but also Army heavy family, just mostly military in this family. So that was cool to see, but they have been atrocious, and Navy actually fired their long time assistant. This guy goes back to Paul Johnson days at Georgia Southern, a triple option legend. Navy can Naya Tumloka. Okay. Naya Tumloka. How do you pronounce this dude's name? I'll never get it right. Naya. What is it?
You got it.
Naya. Naya Tumloka.
Not going to work here anymore.
Well, no, he's the head coach. He's fine. Like, but this is a last-ditch effort.
The office space.
Yeah.
It was there. I had to take it.
But, yeah, they're off to an 0-2 start. And they, like, after the game, immediately gone. Losing in really rough fashion on CBS primetime against the Air Force Falcons.
Did they have Gary Danielson? Brad Nessler for this one?
No, they were busy prepping for Carson Strong and Nevada, San Diego State on CBS primetime for the following. No, I'm just kidding. Do you remember that? That was a great... What 2020, of all the weird pandemic stuff in the college football season, Danielson and Nessler calling Nevada and San Diego State as the primetime SEC kickoff game at 3:30 last year is one of the all-time best weird situations of like this
CBS
is
CBS does seem to get that kind of one weird game a year. Mm-hmm. Like it's usually, I mean, not Army Navy's like a weird game, but it's like that's like the one game where like you guys don't know about these teams. Like y'all are watching the SEC every week. Like you don't know what you're talking about.
Absolutely. Mark Richt back to UGA for the game against Mizzou. He's getting honored I think it's November 6th.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's I like to see Mark Richt getting the respect he deserves. He, I think a lot of people kind of focus on what Mark Richt wasn't and not enough on what he was, that Georgia was nowhere close to being a team that could legitimately expect national championships before Mark Richt got there. And he turned Georgia into like a perennial top 10 program. So like the only reason 10-3 wasn't good enough was because Mark Richt, you know, became a victim of his own success. And so I'm glad for people. I mean, he won nearly 75% of his games. Essentially, like his average season at Georgia was 10-3. So there's about 95% of the programs in college football that would kill for that for a 15-year period. So, you know, glad to see Mark Richt get the respect he deserves.
All right. Well, let's do our headline story of the weekend. Matt, if you had to come up with a front page headline of your college football newspaper, what would the headline be for week 2 in the college football season?
Oh, it might not be creative because we've said this before. Like, we say it basically every year. I just feel like it's more true than it's ever been. It's just the SEC is the cream of the crop, man. Like, it's just – it's becoming, like, just so clear how much better it is than every other conference.
Man. Yeah, I think as a whole, they're the deepest. It's just really, really deep. That's the main thing right now. They're a deep conference, but I don't know. I still think the top of the cream of the crop in the other Power Five schools, they're right there. The best of the best, but
the
that's
only
about
difference
it.
Is there's like one team.
Right. It's
every,
one to two to three maybe
that can compete for a title. But like there could be four or five teams in the SEC any given year that can, you know, be
that's,
one of the best.
That's being a little generous. Four or five that win a title?
I mean, it turns,
you can't even do that right now. You can't do three right now.
I mean, that's debatable.
Who are your three? Bama and who?
Texas A&M, obviously.
And they almost lost to Colorado.
But I mean, they finished fifth last year, though. So they're like, you're clearly a contender if you're finishing fifth. Like, and then LSU is middle of the pack right now. They won. They were like the greatest team in SEC in like college football history 2 years ago. So I'm not like maybe not every year that there's five teams, but it's like there's a group of four or five teams at the top that any given year they can be a contender. Like, and just the rest of the country just doesn't have that. Like for you know, Florida, like they we've questioned how good they look so far, but like Florida is they're probably the second best team in like any other Power Five conference. Like, I just think the SEC is just that strong. Like Ole Miss, like if Ole Miss is in the Big 12 right now, like they might be the best team in the conference. Like, I just think the SEC is just, they've just been flexing their muscles through 2 weeks of the season. That's just how, like maybe there's not five teams this year that can win a national championship, but the SEC is just by far the best conference in the country.
Mm. All right. Well, let's do our add a sticker, remove a sticker, Matt Green. For me, I'm adding a sticker to the FSU radio commentator who threw his headset in disgust after explaining how Florida State should not have been in the defensive scheme that they were in, playing press coverage and no one over the top and not playing prevent defense in that moment, and losing the game in unbelievably heartbreaking fashion, where Florida State fell to FCS Jacksonville State for their first ever loss to an FCS school in program history. There was a piece on Knowles 24/7 today where someone quoted program killer in the piece, losing that game. Like, that's a program killer. And I'm just like, oh.
Woo. It's hard to say it's a program killer. Like,
it's certainly a momentum killer for any goodwill.
It's definitely a momentum killer, especially with how like the moral victory of week one and Mackenzie Milton getting in there versus Notre Dame and making that game close. Like, the people talking about just the crowd at Dope Campbell was back and it was an electric atmosphere. Like, people are buying in, they're excited again. And then to just follow it up with a 17-point performance versus Jacksonville State, like a 17-14 win versus Jacksonville State would already have been like uninspiring. But for it to end on not even a Hail Mary, whatever you want to call it, just that last deep ball for a touchdown, like that's probably like Arkansas was kind of the story of the weekend. But I mean, that's the moment of the college football season so far. Like, that Jacksonville State last second win, like that was just, that's what we watch college football for. Like, that was incredible.
Remove a sticker. The ACC officials in the Pitt Tennessee game, as we talked about earlier in the pod, I'm removing one. I hope we never get that crew ever again. Like, that crew should not call a college football game ever again. I just atrocious across the board. It was, it was so bad. And they removed my return six from the record books, which is sad, but I will always have that memory of it happening in Neyland, and that's all that matters. Leave the memories alone. Another ad for me, Jordan Yates, who stepped in for Jeff Sims because he's out, and they drub Kennesaw State. The Yellow Jackets get a win to get back to 1-1. Yates looked good. I don't know if you watched any of the tape from that game, but I think he might be the guy going forward for the Jackets. And then remove one for Kirby Smart for giving Carson Beck all the first reps this week, leading everyone to believe that it was going to be Carson Beck's opportunity on Saturday, and then pulling out the rug from his four-star quarterback for doing everything right for the experience, as he said, because because you needed experience, as he said, to beat, let me check my notes here, the UAB Blazers, who did not have a football program mere 2 years ago. What was it, 3 years ago, maybe? That they had to reinstate. You know, Bill Clark, great program leader, great coach. They were never going to lose this game, and there was no reason that Carson Beck should not have started. The game was never in doubt, and to not see what you have and to just give it to Stetson Bennett, who we've all known what you've had, which is nothing, for a long time. I mean, that's certainly a choice.
It is nothing. He threw for 300 yards and 5 touchdowns on Saturday.
But there's no upside. There's no upside to playing Stetson. Like, there, you know what he is. He can't win the big games. He's going to run into problems against the teams that matter. You don't know with Carson Beck yet. You don't know with Brock Vandegrift yet. Like,
That's not Kirby's job.
No, it is, because he doesn't deserve... There was somebody on Split Zone Duo today, a very good college football podcast. Alex Kirshner made this point, and I agree with it, which is Kirby does not deserve the benefit of the doubt with veteran quarterbacks anymore. Like, that is something he does not deserve. It's over. You don't get that. You had your shot. Like, I can understand that it's more complicated and it requires a lot more nuance with Fromm and Fields, but we've seen that with Stetson last year. We've seen that with how he's managed his quarterbacks to this point, where Kirby Smart does not deserve the benefit of the doubt with quarterbacks. He does not. Now,
this is a weird... All right, keep going.
Stetson Bennett, you know what you have. You can trust Stetson Bennett. You are going to win this game. If it gets in a... Like, if Carson really struggles, if Carson's bad, and you're up 21-7 or something at halftime, and then Georgia fans are like, okay, put in Stetson to just let us breathe. That was, we tried it with Carson. He had a shot. He played with the first team, whatever. It didn't really work. Okay, we're going to go back to the guy who we know has a very high floor but a very low ceiling and has been in this program for 97 years. He's 5'6". Like, Stetson Bennett, yeah, sure. Put him in there to close the game out. Great. Fan favorite. All that's great. Carson Beck.
He is not a fan favorite, by the way.
I don't know. I don't know if you heard, but he's called the mailman.
They announced he was going to be the starter on their PA.
Oh, yeah, he did get booed. That's true. He did get booed.
Fans booed him, so he's not even, like, he should be a feel-good story.
Well, that's what I meant. It's not fan favorite. I should say feel-good story that the dude just keeps trying. He, like, he's just the, I don't know. He's just the, I don't know how to explain him. If he's not.
I strongly disagree with the point.
All right, make the case. Why would you give Carson Beck first team reps?
Well, because he probably wanted Carson Beck, and honestly, Carson Beck needs the reps more than Stetson Bennett, because Stetson Bennett had an entire year starting, and also Stetson Bennett played against an all-SEC schedule last year, too. Like, he didn't get the benefit of any of these cupcake games. Not that UAB's your typical cupcake, but I don't know how a guy can be a failure when the quarterback he decided on was unbelievably efficient, and not only just efficient, but hitting deep balls. Like, he was hitting all of his deep balls. Like, Carson Beck was in on the third series of the game. Like, these guys are both backup quarterbacks, and you went with the one that had more experience,
which was wrong.
Trusted more. How can it be wrong when you won 56-7?
Because the whole point, it's not about the victory. You were going to win. It's not about the end result, because Georgia was always going to win this game. The end result does not matter. What matters is seeing what you have in Carson and keeping these guys happy. Because guess what? In the transfer portal era, you have to, like, Tennessee's about to run into this problem with Harrison Bailey, where, like, they're going to have to give him reps. They're going to have to, or he's going to transfer. Like, Brian Maurer finally lost out. He transferred. Like, you, with no penalty in this situation, and how Georgia quarterbacks look at the past and, like, how he handled Fields and how he's handled Stetson and how he's handled guys before him, quarterbacks are like, he seems to have a weird veteran presence. So if you're a quarterback like Brock Vandegrift, or you're somebody like that, and you're looking at it and you're like, am I going to get a shot, or is he going to go in the portal for another junior or senior? Is he always going to look for the older guys and not trust the young freshmen and sophomores? Is he just not, that's not his MO? Is Kirby just not going to trust these guys?
He started Jacob Eason as a true freshman. Jake Fromm as soon as Eason.
He didn't want to start Fromm.
But that's because Jacob Eason was a returning starter as a highly talented.
He didn't have to make that choice, though. He was a returning starter, and he didn't recruit Eason.
He did recruit Eason. I mean, he kept Eason. Yeah, Eason committed to
Richt,
but he had to solidify his commitment.
Right.
Like, Eason kind of started looking around once they fired Richt, but Eason, like, he did go with Grayson Lambert, the guy that was the starter veteran, but he made the decision pretty early on to go to Eason. Carson Beck isn't Justin Fields.
We don't know. Because you won't play him. This was an opportunity for you to know what you have, like to see something.
Carson Beck got a lot of possessions in this
game. No. You give him all the confidence in the world. You let him lead this team out. You start from the gate. No. And if he gets hurt, like, that's what you do. You give him everything.
If Carson Stetson
Carson should transfer today.
He's better than Carson Beck right now. If this one game makes Carson Beck want to transfer, then he's not the caliber of quarterback that belong that was going to start at Georgia anyway.
Like, you know what I think? It sounds like he's ready for orange and white. You know who wouldn't put up with this mess? The orange and white. If he goes three hours north,
go for it. If that's really what's going to, like, Brock Vandegrift, like, if he's in a second year in the system and you're going Stetson Bennett, honestly, I don't even agree with your premise, because if Stetson Bennett comes out here and plays this well, then clearly the coach made the right decision.
No, like, because you already know he is a last resort. Stetson is a last.
He's not. He's a second resort.
No,
like, he's the backup quarterback, and he's like
But he shouldn't.
Their second or third quarterback, they're not winning the championship anyway. Obviously, the whole.
Well, we don't know. No, you can't say that because we don't know. A team has won a national title with a freshman quarterback. Like, that's happened. Trevor Lawrence went and did that, like, as a freshman. Like, that's
as the number one overall player.
I'm not disagreeing with that, but what I'm saying is the broader point is you have to massage the 4 and 5 stars. Like, you have already screwed up 1 5 star. You have another one in here. You have another one coming in next year. Kirby has to start giving the young guys Bryce Young right away.
First of all, saying Kirby screwed up the Justin Fields.
I don't want to go down that road. What I'm saying is ultimately.
But I'm saying if Carson Beck is rattled and unhappy by this situation, then he's mentally weak and he has no business playing at Georgia to begin with. I'm not saying he's mentally weak, but I'm saying if your premise is true and Kirby has to massage his ego and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, he does. But you have to massage all the 4 and 5 stars egos. That's part of the job now, is what I'm saying.
Kirby Smart has to win games, and he has to put the best player on the field regardless.
No, you have
These
to do both.
These guys are both backups. Stetson Bennett came in, first two possessions of the game, hit deep balls for like 70-yard touchdowns. Like, even RG3 was saying, why are we taking out Stetson Bennett with how he's playing? And it's because Kirby clearly had a plan to play multiple backup quarterbacks, and Carson Beck came in the game and didn't play nearly as well as Stetson
I wouldn't
Bennett.
Have either, because I didn't start after getting all this. It was probably in his head.
Oh, yeah. And you don't have the mental fortitude to play quarterback at the D1 level.
Like, I disagree.
Like, I'm sorry. I heard, like, multiple Georgia fans saying this, that, like, oh, this makes Kirby look bad. They cursed Carson Beck was number one and taking all the first team reps in practice all week. It's like, maybe he was taking the first team reps and he wasn't playing well in practice. Maybe that's what was so alarming.
But the whole point is you want to see what you have on the field before he transfers. And now Carson should transfer.
No.
I'm saying a full game where they tell him, they're like, Stetson's not coming in barring injury. This is your game. Go impress.
That's ridiculous. Stetson Bennett went out 10 for 12 for almost 300 yards and 5 touchdowns.
You're missing my broader point. Stetson played well, but it doesn't matter. You don't need to see anything in Stetson Bennett.
Also, Carson Beck is responsible for more points scored than Georgia's entire defense this year. Like, Carson Beck made a terrible throw on that pick 6. The running back wasn't even looking, and he made zero effort to make the tackle. Like, Carson Beck, like, Kirby Smart owes nothing to Carson Beck. Like, Carson
See, that's
Beck,
the that's not how you cannot have that mindset with 5 and 4 stars anymore. You cannot have that. They will transfer.
He's a ranked recruit come out of high school. Like, who cares?
I'm telling you, this is a bad, like, that's not how this works. It's not how this
I
works.
I think your premise carries more weight if we're talking about a redshirt freshman, Brock Vandegrift, like a top 10 overall player that we want to see develop. But, like, Stetson Bennett has developed a whole hell of a lot over the last year. Does that not matter?
No.
Like, how? Like, Georgia just, all Georgia wants is to get top level play out of every position on the field. I think this was a huge performance from Kirby Smart with how negative things were, like, oh, this offense looks terrible. Yeah, the defense is great, but this offense is still same old Georgia. Like, oh, and JT Daniels is out now. Like, the spread on this game was at damn like 21 points by the time kickoff started. Like, people are talking about UAB is one of the best group of five teams in the country, and Georgia came out and made them look like a high school team. Like, they didn't even belong on the same field with Georgia. So people acting like, oh, expect a lull after the Clemson game. And for Georgia to come out and hang 50 on UAB in an uncompetitive game, like, from the jump. This is 35 zip at halftime. Like, I think Kirby deserves, like, this shows you the difference in what Georgia is now than once they what they once were. Like, UAB is not a measuring stick game for Georgia, but I saw Georgia play games like this for decades, where you look over at Ohio State playing, you know, Toledo, and they're beating them 50-7, and you're like, oh, well, that doesn't mean anything because the competition or whatever. But Georgia would have these same games against these same inferior teams, and they would just mess around with them and beat them 27-10 and just not beat them in convincing fashion. Like, this defense came out with the exact same level of intensity that they did against Clemson. Like, the offense came out hitting deep balls, like scoring 80-yard touchdowns. Like, I don't know how anyone could take anything negative for Georgia in this game. Like, Stetson Bennett, to have the performance he did, like, the backup quarterback is, especially if JT Daniels is going to be battling an oblique injury, like, the backup quarterback is a very important position for Georgia. And if Stetson Bennett is going to give you this kind of performance, he's the backup. Like, I don't understand how it can be misconstrued any other way. Like, Carson Beck didn't look nearly as good as Stetson Bennett in this game. Like, you just want Kirby Smart to play a player who's not as good? Like, Kirby's worried about winning the game today. Like, that's all he should be worried about.
So we agree. Kirby made an errant judgment this weekend.
Get out of here. I just feel like the goalpost is constantly moving for Kirby Smart. Like, the Justin Fields thing... Like,
wait, I have a question.
Constantly gets thrown back in his face. And it's like, to compare this any way to Justin Fields, like, it's just weird. Like, these are both backup quarterbacks, and Stetson Bennett looked 100 times better than Carson Beck in this game. Like, you're just going to play a guy who you don't think is as good because he might be better in the future? Like, that's crazy.
How long have you been on Kirby's payroll?
I'm not on Kirby's payroll, man. I've just seen a lot of Georgia football, and I just know Kirby is doing it the best of anyone I've ever seen coach Georgia football.
Last thing. You're removing a sticker from somebody else, I seem to recall.
I am removing a sticker because, like, I think we don't even have to get into the whole thing. I'm adding the sticker to Stetson Bennett because
I can't do this. You're breaking up.
Because of the way he played against with the fans not even wanting to see him play. Like, fans is, like, put some respect on Stetson Bennett's name. The helmet sticker I'm taking away from a different head coach, and that's going to be Clay Helton. We talked about USC being the favorite in the Pac-12 South. Like, this schedule is just they seem to miss most of the good teams in the Pac-12. Like, this schedule was just kind of tailor-made for them to take the South this year. And to come out and just get blasted, like, they made it, you know, look a little closer there at the end. But to come out and get blasted against Stanford the way they did, like, Clay Helton, are we going to continue this all the way to December, or are we just going to cut ties now? Like, he's obviously getting fired. He's obviously not the guy for the job. Like, someone can return USC to glory, and Clay Helton is not the guy.
Matt Green, that is all I've got, sir. Fun weekend. Fun weekend, week two. Excited for week three.
I am excited for week three. Last thing, we didn't really touch on Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think Anthony Richardson? I think, honestly, it's so obvious that Anthony Richardson is the guy for Florida. It feels like none of us expect Florida to come out and beat Alabama. Like, no, it's in the swamp and everything. Like, yeah, rowdy environment. Like, they had that going for them, but no one is expecting Florida to beat Alabama. I feel like Emory Jones is going to be treated like the sacrificial lamb. Go out in the first half, go get blasted by Alabama for two quarters. Then we throw Anthony Richardson in there, and then he's the guy moving forward. Like, we already know Emory Jones isn't the guy, so let's not ruin Anthony Richardson's confidence. Let's go feed Emory Jones to the Wolves, and then by the time the game is decided, let's get Richardson some reps, and then he's going to be the guy moving forward. I think it's fairly obvious just how much more dynamic of a player he is than Emory Jones.
We'll see. But it has not been the best start for Emory Jones down there in Gainesville, and Richardson does the big time stuff on his legs. It's a little bit,
yeah, especially if Emory Jones is supposed to be the runner. Like,
well, no, he's more of a pocket guy. Like, Emory Jones has a cannon. I don't know. It's kind of interesting how Florida and Tennessee's quarterback situations is almost identical at the moment.
Yeah, it really does.
As Zeus is like, Matt, feed me. Feed me. I'm a gigantic Rottweiler.
Zeus is like, it's a ball game. Finish this stuff up.
All right. Matt Green, we can find you on Twitter at @Matt_W_Green. Follow myself at @Chase_Thomas. This episode of the podcast will roll along with some more guests, so stay tuned for that. But yeah, two episodes a week during the college football season, so look out for that on your feed twice a week. Don't forget, folks, you can also, yeah, this is going to be great. You can keep up with all of us at ChaseThomasPodcast.com, SportsRenaissanceMan.substack.com, a ton of other great podcasts on the Blue Wire Network, so go to BlueWirePods.com today to check out all of those great content shows that we have for you. And yeah, leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts if you have not already. Matt Green, I will talk to you in a couple days.
Yes, sir.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.